Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
So here we are. We are live.
Hi.
We are live!
Woo!
So hi, everybody. This is Mel Rosenberg for the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. That's a mouthful. And I'm here with an incredible young lady who, it turns out, is from Ottawa. Please welcome the wonderful author and illustrator, Rosemary Mosco. Woo!
Hi.
Applause.
Hi.
I'll do all the applause. Woo!
Hi. Great to be speaking with you.
So, Rosemary, as we speak, literally, you have a book out.
Yes.
And I love it.
Thank you.
Can you show our video audience the book? It's called Flowers Are Pretty Weird. That's a very Canadian thing, you know. I think that the Americans would say flowers are really weird. They're awesome weird. The Canadians, flowers are a little bit weird.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're originally a Canadian.
Yeah, you know, you can't live in Canada for, I think in my case, it was 24 years or something, and then leave and not still keep a lot of those cultural elements. So, but we were also sort of trying to make kind of a pun, because we figured people would read the pretty and they think, oh, that's so nice. And then they'd get hit with the weird and sort of, you know, realize this wasn't the book they expected.
No, I think I missed that because I'm a Canadian. Also, I grew up in Canada. I spent my first 18 years mostly in Ottawa.
Yeah.
And even though I've lived in Israel, which is the Middle East, for a million years, I'm still too Canadian for the Levant culture.
Yeah, that's how I feel about America. Is I've worked on my apologies. I now say sorry instead of sorry, but I still apologize too much. And people always think when I say sorry that I'm really feeling sorry, instead of I'm just saying, you know, get out of my way, which is what it means in Canadian.
Yeah, Canadians are polite, so people misinterpret that as thinking that they're also nice, which they may or not be. I'm sure you are.
Yeah.
But they're very polite. And I'm actually writing a children's book about that. But we're not going to go into my stuff. We're going to go into your wonderful career.
I love that idea, though. So, you'll have to tell me about that later.
I will, but later. So Flowers Are Pretty Weird. And this is a wonderful book. I love it. You have puns, which I love, and you have this bee kibitzing in and out, and it's just a wonderful book. Can you read a bit of it? Show people some of the lovely, lovely work, and mention the wonderful illustrator, Jacob Suva.
Yeah, Jacob Suva. I mean, I wore this shirt partly because it sort of matches his patterns on the book, but he's so incredible in his detail and its color. So I can read, I'll read a couple of pages from the front. So our narrator is this bee character. So it says, "Hi, I'm a bee. And there's one thing that a bee adores more than anything else. And it's flowers. I love them. Believe me, I do." I wasn't sure whether to include puns at first. My editor said, you have to put puns in.
Well, your editor is from Tundra.
Yes. Yeah.
A Canadian.
Yeah, of which course. They're absolutely wonderful.
I have to interject. I have fallen in love with Tundra. On the one hand, it's such a prestigious press. It's part of the Penguin Random House family. And it's got this Canadian-ness that I love. And Canadians love puns. And the book is full of puns. Read us a few more puns.
Absolutely. Oh, gosh. No, but I have to say Tundra was kids incredible to work with. They're so wonderful. I feel so fortunate.
Yes, you can mention the editor again.
Yeah, Liz. Yeah. And she was, she was just so enthusiastic about all my wild ideas and kind of helped rein in some of my over researching, and it was really good. So flowers, I love them. Believe me, I do. I love their bright colors and soft petals. I especially love their sweet nectar. Yum. And we have this beautiful spread by Jacob Suva with these little bee arms. And then maybe you don't think flowers are exciting. Maybe they even seem boring to you, but not to me. If you hang out with flowers as much as I do, you start to learn some strange things. See, flowers aren't just pretty. They're pretty weird. They're weird enough to make your four wings quiver, if you're a bee, that is. And then we get into some of the weird traits of flowers. And we set it up sort of like opposite. So we have cute flowers and then we have spooky flowers that look like ghosts. And we go on with all sorts of other smelly flowers, flowers that smell good, flowers that smell bad. It's a lot of fun. It's full of really strange facts.
So I know that you are a bird person. You are an internationally acclaimed bird illustrator. You've illustrated birds for the New York Times and other very prestigious magazines, and you have several bird books. Mm-hmm. And from birds to flowers, I guess it's not such a great distance, but tell us how this happened.
Yeah, well, and I would say I'm a cartoonist because there are people called scientific illustrators who draw, you know, every feather and measure every part of the bird, and I do not do that. I make fun cartoons that sort of simplify some of the traits for sure. So I actually have a degree in botany. My master's was from the University of Vermont. So although I kind of fell into the bird niche, I consider myself a naturalist. I do a whole lot of different nature things and I love botany, but I feel like a lot of people think that botany isn't as exciting, which is partly why I wanted to write this book, is because, you know, when I'm saying, well, you may think flowers are boring, I'm speaking to many people I've talked to who sort of say, oh, plants, you know, they're just kind of in the background.
Yeah, but, you know, everybody's looking for STEM books. Oi, you have to stop me from punning.
Oh, my goodness. Took me a second. Why? I need to hire you as my pun consultant for this book. That's such a good one.
I charge peanuts.
I love it.
You know, Rosemary, thousands of people are going to listen to this. And many of them are not Canadians. Mm-hmm. So we have to be on our best behavior. Oh, no.
Wow. That one really stung, I have to say.
Oy vey. Okay. So why didn't you illustrate the book?
Oh, that's such a good question. So I'm trained as a writer and as a science writer, but not as an illustrator, which is not to say that you have to be trained to be an illustrator by any means. But I feel more comfortable writing and doing the research. And I'm not very fast. I'm really slow. So I really respect book illustrators who can put together something with this, you know, unbelievable level of detail in a reasonable timeline. So I am if you are listening to this and you are a writer illustrator and you've never tried just writing, it's heaven, because you send away a book and then it comes back and it's this masterpiece, you know, and it's incredible. And then I would sort of work with Jacob to make sure that some of the things were accurate botanically a little bit more, but it was heaven. I mean, he was joy to work with, but I've loved every illustrator that I've worked with. I've gotten so lucky. So yeah, I recommend it. It's wonderful.
But aren't agents and publishers looking for author illustrators these days?
You know, I feel like that's true to a certain extent, but also I think what Tundra was looking for was someone who had both the science cred, but also the humor. So I feel like even if you don't have that full package, if you're able to bring, you know, something else to the table, like the science component, that's valuable too. So I think that was a lot of it, was they, you know, they had funny books and they had sciencey books, but they were excited to find someone who could do both of those.
Okay. Things. So how did this happen? Because we both know that writing a picture book and getting it published is one in 1,000 or 10,000 or a gazillion.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So,
I know.
So how did this happen? Well, maybe we should start with your early life.
Sure. Yeah.
Why don't we start there? Because then you're going to start talking about how you got into writing and so on. So we're preempting ourselves. Start at the very beginning. Start at the birth of Rosemary.
Sure. I was born in Washington, D.C. from a mom who is from Canada and a dad who is from the States. So I'm a dual citizen, which is very, very lucky for me. And so I was just always really interested in science and art. And I figured at some point I would have to pick one of those because I didn't really know anyone who did both. So there were sort of these fabled people, you know, the guy who wrote my field guides or whatever, you know, there were people I was vaguely aware of, but I figured there was no way I could do that. So I just kept trying to just pick one. And I couldn't do it. I kept doing whichever other one on the side. So, you know, I'd be taking an art class, but I'd draw birds, and I'd be taking a science class and I'd be, you know, drawing what we saw. And I went to McGill and I took anthropology because I went to my advisor and I said, can I do a major in science, minor in art, or vice versa? And he said, oh, absolutely not. Why would you combine those things? That doesn't make any sense. You know, and I was 19 and I thought, because there was a grade 13 in Ottawa, so I was a little older, but I thought, oh, well, I guess my dream is dead. So I chose anthropology because in my confused young self, I thought, well, that's art and science, sort of, you know, and by the end of my degree, I realized, oh, the people in anthropology, they love it. You know, they want to be anthropologists.
Yeah, I'm going to say something that's going to be a little bit, won't be offensive to anthropologists, but some anthropologists are arts people mm-hmm. who want to be scientists.
Yeah, I mean, it's a funny discipline. I felt like it was really sort of, when I was there, it was really trying to find itself after a lot of years of cultural insensitivity and, you know, really unfortunate stuff. I mean, it really helped teach me to be more culturally literate and just to be a better person, you know, and more understanding. Absolutely. So I'm not at all deriding the degree, but it was not what I was looking for. You know, but I thought, oh.
Deriding the degree is my job, Rosemary.
Thank you.
And then you went on.
Very Canadian.
Yeah, it's okay. That's my Middle Eastern coming out. I'm the host. I can do what I like. Either I'll get fired, but you know, who's going to fire me? And then you went to Vermont for your master's degree.
Yeah, I sort of spent a bunch of years in between wandering around, trying different jobs, drawing nature cartoons. And then I sort of thought, okay, to really, you know, I started to realize, okay, there is a long history of combining science and art. You know, science is full of people who illustrated what they saw. Like, this is, it's so wild that there's no path for me here, but I can figure this out. So I started emailing PhD programs and saying, hey, you know, I have really good grades. I have been doing a lot of reading. Can I get a PhD in, you know, or a master's in science? And everyone said, oh no, you don't have any credibility. You know, your degree was in anthropology. You know, what are you doing?
I rest my case.
Yeah. So then I, you know, and I spoke to one advisor who was sort of telling me about, you know, I study kiwi birds. Do you know what a kiwi bird is? Like, sort of, you know, fairly condescending. And I thought, okay, this is not for me. Like, I can't convince these people that I'm the real deal. So I eventually decided, okay, well, you know, who used to combine science and art really well is a naturalist. You know, I was thinking like a Rachel Carson or a, I'm trying to think of another example. there are lots of sort of really relatively unknown naturalists who are women who were sort of exploring around. And so I thought, oh, well, I'll be a naturalist. That's what I'll be. And I Googled naturalist grad school and something came up. And it was this program in Vermont called the Field Naturalist Program. And I thought, no kidding. And I looked into it and it was, you know, we respect art and communication. We try to teach people to be well-rounded conservationists. And I thought, oh my goodness, I have to get into this program. It was really, really competitive. I think when I went at the open house, they take like 9 people and there were maybe 60 people there. And I thought, oh no, I know. You know, I took a Greyhound bus there. And I get in and the advisor just seemed really excited. He said, you know, we always take one artist in the program. I was a complete fish out of water. I was a city girl, you know, I didn't know my science. And, but I got in and that really, that completely changed things for me. And it was technically a botany degree. So we did a lot of botany, which was where the botany came in. Yeah.
Okay. And, but you write mostly for young children.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what my theory is? Mm-hmm. Those of us who write for young children are stuck somewhere in our childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So you just skipped over your childhood, like yeah. like somebody skipping stones on the Rideau River.
Good reference. Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to. It's hard to like express it more than I loved science and art. I just like, everything I did was both of those things.
Rosemary, what were you like as a 5-year-old? This book is for 5-year-olds.
Incredibly precocious. I sat people down and I held up my books and I said, these are all the facts I know, which I actually, you know, they say you become who you were as a kid, but I had to tamp that down because that's not good science communication, is sitting someone down and saying, here are a bunch of very boring facts.
When you were five years old.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, I would sit down relatives and I would say, here's my bird book. This is a bird. This is another bird. And they would be so bored. So I was really precocious. I just wanted to learn. I just wanted to be outside. I got bullied a lot as a kid for being into nature and science, and for being a girl who was into those things, like quite a lot. So I would volunteer at the local Museum of Nature where there was this really great guy who had a whole bunch of different volunteers. And I think I was about 10 when I did that. Like I was fairly young. And he would teach us all how to paint with acrylics and also learn all these dinosaurs. And that was incredibly helpful. But then when I tell my friends about it, they'd say, ooh, you know, you're doing this nerdy thing. You're going to make us look unpopular. And so it was a challenge for sure.
So you're a Renaissance man who's a lady.
Yeah.
Science, art, illustration. You probably love music.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like.
You went to Lisgar High School.
But yeah, there's such a history of naturalist women who did this. I mean, you look back and there are just like endless women who painted and then who observe nature. And, you know, I feel like I'm standing on a lot of shoulders, but a lot of these women were sort of ignored because they were women. They were also seen, I mean, especially Rachel Carson was really seen as sort of a dilettante because she was writing with emotions. And that's very hysterical. So, you know, I've experienced all that stuff.
I'm sure that Lewis Carroll was treated as a dilettante by his mathematician colleagues for writing these silly, ridiculous poems. So I'm not sure. I think he was a male, actually. But this is, you know, we have to ignore these people who want to put us into vertical troughs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with you all the way.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that.
So now, okay, so you've written also from a young age and you've illustrated from a young age.
Oh, you know, I should have mentioned that too. Yeah, I mean, I feel like these things are ordinary, which they're not, but my mom was a journalist. So she would have me, when I was a kid, I would dictate books, little paper books, and she would do the writing. And then as mm-hmm. I got older, I would write them. And so I was writing these very precocious books and I have like, you know, a whole folder of books.
Oh, we should publish them. I'm going to publish them. we have to talk.
Yeah, there. Wow. The plots are lacking, but
your mom, a journalist for the Citizen, the Ottawa Journal.
Gosh, so she's amazing. She was a correspondent for Canadian Press covering.
Okay.
The White House. That's how my parents met. So she was covering the White House in her early 20s, which is wild to me. And then she, or I guess mid 20s, and then she also did some writing for a newspaper called the Whig Standard out of Kingston.
Mm-hmm. Is she from Ottawa?
Yeah. So she taught journalism.
I probably know her.
Oh, Catherine McKercher. She taught journalism at Carleton for years. And she wrote the textbook on it. Yeah. Have you heard of her?
No, but did she go to Hillcrest High School?
No. She grew up in Nepean.
Nepean. No, no.
For those who are not familiar with the geography, it's a little out of Ottawa. Yes. But for anyone outside of the area, it's Ottawa proper. It's
a, well, we have some, you know, there's Jewish geography and there's Ottawa geography.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to writing.
Yeah.
So how did you, how, your mom, journalist, and your dad,
sociology, also at Carleton. They worked on the same floor and wrote books together, which is very cute, I think.
That's incredible. So you come from a very literate, literary, book-loving, bookworming family. And when did you break in as a writer?
Yeah, so it was not the typical story. So I took a year off from college in 2003, 2004, which was really important to me because I was just floundering in anthropology and I just felt really lost. And so I moved to Toronto and I drew a cartoon that year. And I worked for a group called FLAP that tries to stop birds from hitting glass windows, which is a huge problem. And so I was kind of living my dream. I was working with birds and I was making a cartoon about birds. And I put that online. I mean, this was 2004. There was so much that, you know, I don't think Facebook was around. Like it was so long ago. And I got really good feedback on it. And so throughout the next many years, I put cartoons online occasionally, and I started to build a following. And so what I found was book publishers were sort of trying to figure out, okay, what sells now? Like the landscape is so different. So Tundra actually reached out and said, we're looking for books in this particular vein. We'd invite you to pitch.
Who did they reach out to?
To me. Yeah.
How did they know you, Rosemary?
One of the people who works at Tundra, John Martz, was a designer who I knew from my time in Toronto. He's incredible. He's a cartoonist and an illustrator. And so another thing that happened in 2004 was I went to my first comic book convention and I started meeting different illustrators and cartoonists. So a lot of it has been social connections too, because, you know, I wrote a book, I co-wrote an Atlas Obscura book, and that was through a connection named Colleen Venable, who knew my work from a really long time ago, you know, through cartoons, because she was also a cartoonist. And so she thought you would be the perfect fit. So in a weird way, it was like I was putting an online portfolio out there for years and years and years and years and building a following while I was working at nonprofits. And then that sort of started to twig the interest of people. So it's been kind of a weird organic process that just involved.
Rosemary, it's okay. I've interviewed over 50 writers and none of them has a typical story because.
Yeah, that's comforting.
Because when the odds are so infinitesimally small, mm-hmm. You know, statistics dies. And then you have these weird outlying stories. So, you know, you're an outlier. And social connections are important, but you have to have the goods. This is what I'm learning.
Yeah.
So it's important to know people and to be known by people. But when they say, well, Rosemary, what do you have to send us?
Well, and you know, I would say I've also, you know, had other book projects. I did one for National Geographic where they just reached out cold from my internet persona. So it just felt like building an internet persona was really key. And at the time going to conventions, but you know, they sort of, the internet took over from those conventions. And the internet, as terrible as it is, has been a godsend for me, you know, oh my goodness, in terms of collaborations and publishing. Yeah.
So what happened now with flowers are pretty weird.
Yeah. I mean, so
how did that happen?
So that was Tundra reaching out about a butterfly book. So a book called Butterflies Are Pretty Gross, which was a previous book. And I wrote that and they sort of gave me a general idea and they didn't say, you know, we'll buy it. They said, just here's a wild idea, write something and we'll consider it, which is how this stuff works. And I thought, I can't write a children's book. What am I doing? So I went and read a zillion different nonfiction children's books and I whipped something up. I whipped up some not very good things and sent those to my agent. And he said, what are you doing? So then I wrote this one and they liked it. And so that was the precursor to Flowers Are Pretty Weird. So I felt really, oh, and you know, there's one detail that I didn't mention that I completely forgot. My first book project was me saying yes to a project that didn't hit any of my interests. It was First Second does a series of science graphic novels. And they had a project where the previous writers, it just didn't work out. Their schedules didn't work out. And it was a book about space and they needed someone to write a graphic novel about space in 3 months. And I thought, space, but I took it because I thought this could be a stepping stone. And that proved that I could write books. But It was definitely one of those things where, you know, a lot of authors say, oh, I won't write a book until it's what I really love. And I fell in love with it. But, you know, initially I thought, oh, space. there's no plans in space.
So that book sent you into orbit.
I love it. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay. So that's wonderful. And the book, when is the book is out this week, this month?
Yeah. So it came out. I'm trying to think of exactly the day because everything has been pushed around so much. What was the final date? It's out. It's been out for a few weeks, but I'm blanking on the exact date because of the container ship stuff and the supply chain stuff. We moved our dates several times and every single one of my books has been moved, but it's out. It's in bookstores now. I saw it in my local bookstore in a nice display of kind of spring and summer flower stuff. So
if we had to, it's a lovely book. Everybody run out and buy it. It's really gorgeous. It's gorgeous. It's funny, and it's also it has a lot of real information. So what did I want to ask you? People talk about informational nonfiction. Mm-hmm. Would you categorize your book in that category?
I think so. It's hard to. With picture books, it's challenging because there's only so much information you can dump on people, but I think so. I mean, it's really rigorously researched. There's one little note in there where I talk about some flowers live in the sky, and it's such a cute little thing, but it's a bromeliad, a plant that lives up in the sky. And I initially had a different species, and then I realized that the pollinators for that species had not been verified. And so I contacted a ton of bromeliad researchers. I cross-referenced all these different species. I read all these papers and I finally found a guy who said, you know, this hummingbirds probably pollinate this one. And it was so much work and so much stress for, you know, me and my poor illustrator had to redraw bromeliad and no one will notice it. So I feel like when there's that level of research, it has to be informational, I think.
No, absolutely. But it's also got this fiction narrative to it. So it's so lovely. And there's so much stuff there. And it's all weird and wonderful. I want to ask you two things. How did you find your agent? And what is your advice to the thousands and thousands of writers who have not found an agent, have not got a book deal?
Yeah. So again, I feel like I'm not very helpful on this one because what happened with my agent was I did that first second book and that was without an agent. That was basically First Second saying, we're desperate. You write science. You want to you do comics. You want to take a stab at this. And I did it. And I worked really hard to stay on deadline and be really good at it. And so they were pleased with me. And then Workman reached out about the Atlas Obscura book. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is a really big project. And so what I did was I reached out to friends and said, who has an agent who could help me with this project. And the thing about agents that a lot of folks don't know is when you have, you know, some sort of an offer, agents are delighted because they know they're going to get it cut.
That's first of all, that's great.
Yeah.
It's correct. So get a book deal and then make life easy for an agent.
I hate to say that, but this wasn't a work for hire project, but it was in a sort of a sense. I had a lot of sort of creativity and control, but also it was for Atlas Obscura. So it was in their style. It was using their research. And again, wasn't a project where I said, you know, this is the book I want to write. It was them saying, we need someone who can write to this age range. You'd already written this book to this age range. It was a middle grade range. So it was sort of a funny project, but I found an agent, Seth Fishman, who's incredible, who does a lot of work with internet cartoonists. And so he knows how that works and how to sort of explain to publishers, we're going to build this person's career. I know they do cartoons, but this is relevant. So he's, you know, he's incredible. So that was really how it happened, was this kind of backwards thing where I had this book and I thought, oh my goodness, I don't know how to read this contract, you know. What am I doing? Am I doing this right? And so he was delighted to take it on. But he's also, you, when you do that, you have to be really careful and do your research because there are predatory agents out there. You have to find someone who is really going to try to then build your career off of that project. But the Atlas Obscura book was an amazing experience. It was so amazing. The only thing I'm sad about is that they didn't fly me to 1,000 destinations around the world, which they couldn't have. But everyone always says, you know, ooh, have you been to, you know, such and such place? And like, no, they didn't. They didn't have the budget to fly an author to.
Have you ever been to Israel? Have you been to Israel?
I have not. My sister went on this incredible trip to Haifa as a school exchange. And all she could talk about was how it was the most beautiful place she'd ever been. And I was so jealous. I was sitting at home getting
Rosemary, we're going to have a children's writer conference in Israel.
Okay. I like that.
We just decided right now.
Yes. That sounds great. I bet there's a lot of birds there that I have never seen before.
Israel, we have a lot of birds.
Yeah.
We have too many birds here.
Oh, no.
Yes. We're not going to go into that, though. So I think the advice that you've given is really sage advice to other writers. You know, get in there, write. It might not be exactly what you want, but write. Mm-hmm. And try and don't turn down book deals. Which I stupidly did once. Once you have a book deal, get an agent and ignore people that want to pigeonhole you, especially if you write books about pigeons as you do.
I love that. Yeah, I think that's really important. I mean, I think I was willing. So nonfiction is so different from fiction because I didn't have a world that I wanted to share, you know, share with people. I had facts that I wanted to share with people and a style. And so I was delighted to pick projects and just research, you know, and learn about new things. And so in the end, this Facebook was a delight because I learned all this new stuff. So I think plunging into it with that attitude and saying, you know, okay, this isn't, you know, the project that I would necessarily come up with because I would never think, oh, I could write about space, but just giving that, you know, 1,000% and then moving on from that. And then also one thing that's really helped me is I love being edited, which I think has something to do with having a mom who edited my stuff pretty intensely when I was a kid. Not to speak ill of her, she did a great job, but most kids don't have a mom who has done copy editing, you know, for a newspaper going through. She, in her journalism class, if you misspelled someone's name in an assignment after the first assignment, you failed because that's how journalism works, but that's, you know, not how most people think it works. So she was, you know, quite diligent. And so I've become very comfortable with being edited. And that has served me, I think, really well, because I'm able to work with people and accept changes and so forth.
What are you working on right now?
So I have a draft of a picture book that I'm very excited about that has a Canadian focus, and I can't biographical and I can't say more. And I am working on another botanical focused book, which I also can't say anything about. I unfortunately don't have anything finished that's on its way out that I can talk about. But I just put out a book called Expedition Backyard, too, just a, 2 days ago. Oh, my goodness. It's funny that with the supply chain stuff, all the schedules got messed up. So in the end, I wound up with three books coming out almost at the same time, which you do not want as an author. But this is a graphic novel about the outdoors and the nature of your backyard. And it's illustrated by someone named Binglin Hu, who is incredible. And so, yeah, that just came out. So I guess I'm going to take a little rest and then move on. Yeah.
Incredible. So we're going to close soon. So now's the time to say anything that you want to say that you think that I should have asked you and I didn't ask you.
Yeah, let me think.
Get back to me. I can interview you again.
This was so much fun. And you asked some really profound questions. And I mean, I suppose I would just say, if there are any nerdy kids out there who feel like, you know, their interests can't mesh together, they can. They absolutely can.
I teach all my students to acquire the most unexpected skills you can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a scientist, then learn weaving. I mean, that's what the world is all about, isn't it? It's connecting weird things. So for me, this was also very special. And the fact that I didn't know you were from Ottawa until like 2 minutes before we went online. And that's incredible. So we'll have to have another conversation off camera on growing up in Ottawa. What I'd like to do is I want you to read another little bit of your marvelous book, which we're celebrating. Flowers Are Pretty. Weird.
Weird. Yeah, absolutely.
By Rosemary Mosco, without an E at the end.
Yeah, it's a lot of people think it comes from Moskowitz, which makes a lot more sense, but it's from an Italian word mosca, which means either mosquito or small annoying person. And then it got changed from Mosca to Moscow.
Of course it did.
So it's unfortunate. And we're not sure why that happened. Mm-hmm. So let's see. So near the end of the book, the bee is, you know, has taken you through this journey and is about to show you the weirdest flowers. So it says, if you want me to show you the wildest flowers of all, turn the page. If you don't, drop this book and go play with some pollen. So you have an option here. So let's plow ahead and be very brave. So it says, you bee leave me again. I'm the luckiest bee you'll ever see. Most flowers smell good. Roses have a sweet scent. They use their perfume to attract butterflies and bees. And we have butterflies and bees. And Jacob has beautifully done this sort of YouTube thing called BeeTube, which is incredible. But then some flowers stink. Starfish flowers smell like dead meat. And some orchidantha flowers stink like horse poop. They use their stench to attract flies and beetles that eat yucky things. And then he has this absolutely disgusting illustration here. So I always like to put gross, stinky stuff in my book.
Ah, kids love it.
Kids love it. So yeah, that was the stinky component.
I have a scratch and sniff book, and of all the smells in the book, the kids prefer the disgusting garlic.
You know, as an Italian, I got to say garlic. I love it.
There you go. So Rosemary Mosco, without an E at the end. We're celebrating your book out by Tundra, which I love, which is called Flowers Are Pretty Weird. I really highly recommend. It's so much fun. It's funny. And it's full of information. And you're going to get the 25 cents for each copy sold. And you seem like a very nice, deserving human being. It's been great interviewing you, and we'll meet next week without other viewers and listeners and talk about growing up in Ottawa.
Yeah, that sounds delightful. Thank you so much for your insightful questions. And now I'm feeling very emotional about the nerdy kid who got bullied, who now gets to tell people facts about plants. So
we're gonna talk about that. It. What I was thinking is that we should take all these bullies in the world and put them in a room together and bring them bouquets of these stinky orchids.
Yeah. But then maybe they'd all become botanists because they're so inspired.
Yeah, no, I'm in favor of kids that are bullies, becoming decent human beings, if that's possible. Yeah. I'm not an anthropologist. I can tell you that I still resent kids who I grew up with in Ottawa who bullied me. And it was 60 some odd years ago, and I'm still upset and wish them ill. And that's not a good thing, especially if you're Jewish. And even if you're Christian.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of them, so I've talked to at least some of them since then, and they had a rough time. And I don't want to excuse every terrible, person, but some of that behavior was just people who had a difficult, difficult time. So yeah, I feel for them too. I hope they've healed their hearts.
If you're Christian, it's easier to turn the other cheek.
Yeah.
I'm Jewish and we don't, it's not in our lexicon. But this has been a wonderful conversation.
Yeah, it's been delightful.
And it just goes to show that essentially we are the kids writing for ourselves.
Yeah, and for other kids out there to try to give them an easier time than we had and show them how beautiful the world can be.
Yeah, we're a little bit catchers in the rye, especially you.
And everyone else is phonies. It's a catcher in the rye joke. Yeah, that part I was not down with. Well, thank you. This has been so fun.
Yes. So I'm Mel Rosenberg, and this is the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network. And we've been here with a fellow Canadian, an Ottawan, a fellow scientist, Rosemary Moscow, and it's been delightful, and we will be in touch. Everybody run out and buy your wonderful book.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, dear.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.